All right. And then. Oh, yeah, this.
It's dangerous to just put.
Can you guys hear me? Thank you very much. All right, good afternoon, everybody. Hope everybody's having a good day today so far. So I love feedback. I won't show your feedback here, but I will highlight areas for growth. So if you write me, I will read it, even if you say mean things. But don't say mean things, please. So these are some areas for growth I've kind of highlighted based on the feedback. And so. Speed is one of them, so I will go slower. Clarity is another one, so I will take time to explain everything on the slides. Feedback, I think it was in terms of Kahoot questions, so we'll try that a little differently today, but I'll include a lot of those. And then being careful to use a pointer so that I highlight the things on the slides that I'm currently talking about. I'm very open to this, so feel free to write me. I read it. I won't show it, but I read it. So last time we covered linking. We looked at the relocation tables. We looked at types of dynamic linking. We looked at the AT&T syntax, particularly the fact that the destination is last, and this is different from Intel. And then we looked at this notion of base, index, scalar, and offset. And the condition codes. So we looked at condition codes, and we'll revisit that today. So any questions on stuff from last time? OK. Oh, question?
Is dynamic linking, that's like when it's the 0, 0, so the link goes to the address?
So when the linker updates the address in the relocation table, and copies the corresponding code into the executable, that is static linking. Dynamic linking is where the address is updated, but the address is not relative to that executable. It's to a shared file that's a part of the system. So the code associated with that particular function is not added to the executable. It's linked externally. And in particular, the reason it's called dynamic linking is that it's linked at runtime. DLLs stand for dynamically linked libraries. And in Linux, there's the notion of a shared object file, a .so file. Any other questions? OK. So there are some key learning outcomes for today. Today we want to review LEA. We kind of talked about that last time. We want to look at some of the LEA tricks. We want to look at condition codes. We want to finish and review C code translation. We want to do a quick introduction to C with some of the nuances. We want to look at the and OR operators. And we also want to do pointer arithmetic. So hopefully we'll get there. When we did LEA last time, we looked at how it computes the address and stores it in a particular register. And we looked at the difference between LEA and move, and the notion was that when move computed the address, it would go to memory, it would pull the value at that memory location, and then update that to the register. While LEA load effective address would simply load the address at that point. And so with LEA, we have these cool tricks that we can do. So we can take REX and add it to REX times 4. So this is equivalent to doing REX times 5. So it's looking at the value that's stored in the REX register, the value that's stored in this REX register, multiplying it by 4 and adding 1, which is equivalent to doing REX times 5. So this is a cool trick. Here is another way of kind of doing addition. So you could have RBX plus RCX, and then adding that to the RDX register. So I went through an example last time where we did a detailed step-by-step for the LEA and move instructions. So would you guys like me to do that again, or are we comfortable with LEA and move? So do it again. Okay, all right, yeah, that's critical. For the BOM, can I repeat it? Yeah, so the question is, are we gonna be writing a lot of assembly? And the BOM lab has you read a lot of assembly.
Okay.
So it's important to be able to read it.
So I'm totally comfortable. I just noticed with different syntaxes on the board, I was wondering if we were using Intel or AT&T.
Oh, AT&T, yeah. And I will open this in PowerPoint so we can get it. Yes. We already have a virus, right? Because I'm using a random stick. Okay, so here was the LEA move example that we went through last time. I should have started it at that slide. Okay, so here was the LEA and move example from last time. So the first line says load effective address. And so the way the address is calculated is it's going to take the RCX register, the value in RCX, which is 4. It's going to multiply it by 4. And then it's going to add that value to RDX. And so 4 times 4 is 16. And in hex, that's 1, 0. 16 to the 1, 16 to the 0. And it's going to take that value and store it in RDX. Take that value, add it to RDX, and then store that address in REX. So here, when we looked at this last time, the result is going to be 100 plus x10, and so that's going to be 10. And so in REX, we're going to expect to see 0x10. So any questions? Are we comfortable with that? Do we see how that works? Yes. So this is the destination register that it's going to get stored in. So thing to remember with AT&T syntax as opposed to Intel syntax is that the destination is always last. So the move instruction is a little different. When it calculates the address, it goes to memory and it looks up the value at that address and copies that value into memory. So here, it computes the same address, 110, but instead of copying the address, it copies the instruction. This is really loud, I'm sorry. So, can you guys still hear me?
Nope. Can you still?
Maybe I had to go all the way. So, here with the move instruction, it's gonna copy the value at 110, which is 8, into the register RBX. So here it's gonna copy 8 into RBX, which is, So any questions about this? Are we good now? Yeah? Okay, so what's the result for this line? Anybody want to volunteer an answer? So we're gonna copy RDX into RDI. So what gets copied, 100 or 1? Yep, because we're going to copy the address. And so the same thing for the move. So what copied for the move? 1, that's right. Great. All right. So now these make a lot more sense to us. And so let's try this. Let's try this again. I was going to do the Kahoot create, but I think we'll just take a minute to chat, and then some people might remember the solution from last time. If not, it will be a good opportunity for us. So pair off, and then spend a minute chatting about the answer, and then tell me what you think. Is there what? Nothing? That's valid syntax.
It's valid. It just means that there's...
All right, so how many people think it's D? A, B, C? All right, cool, nice consensus. So RDI is gonna store our first parameter, right, which is args. And so it's gonna do args times 8 here. Maybe I can do this, actually. Yeah, so this works. Can you guys see this? So the first line is going to do RDI times 8. And remember, RDI is going to hold our first args. So this is our first argument, and our first argument is args. And so arg times 8 gets stored in RDI, and then that gets loaded into our register EAX. And so then we're going to take EDI, which is going to be the lower 32 bits of our args value. And we're going to do EAX, or register EAX, minus, I'm going to put there, minus EDI. So this is going to be equivalent to saying args, or arg 8 times 8, minus the lower 32 bits of arg. And so when we look at our solution, can you guys see this?
Yeah.
Yeah. When we look at our solution, none of those are there. So the correct answer is C. OK. All right, so I'll keep going. So we talked about condition codes last time. We kind of went through them kind of quickly. But there are four condition codes in particular. Should I fix it? Yeah. So there are four condition codes in particular: the carry flag, the sign flag, the zero flag, and the overflow flag. And so here's an example of adding the source and destination register together, so A plus B. And we're going to store the result in T. And so if the addition, if we're thinking about the addition as an unsigned addition, then the if there's an extra carry bit, the carry flag gets set. So if you remember from when we designed that first one-bit adder, and we had a result that needed to stay in two bits, we had that carry, so that's equivalent here. The zero flag gets set if the result of this addition is zero. The sign flag gets set if the result of the addition is negative. And the overflow flag gets set if there's two's complement overflow. So overflow would occur if we have a number that's greater, if we have a positive number and we add it to another positive number and the result is negative. So that's obviously overflow. And if we have a negative number and we add it to another negative number and we get a number that's positive or zero, that obviously occurred because there was overflow. And so those flags would get set if that's the case. And so why are these flags important? So the reason that these flags are important is that they're read by the jump instructions. And later on in the class, when you implement your pipeline processor, you will do it using two flags. You will use, it will have the zero flag and the sign flag. And so these will be a part of your processor. And so when you think, oh, well, what are these zero flags and sign flags? They're actually just one-bit registers. And so the jump less than and jump equal to, or less than and equal to, and all the jump condition codes actually look at these flags to figure out whether or not a jump is taken or not. And they're done by looking at whether or not the result of whatever the arithmetic operation that happened earlier was for setting these particular flags. So I have a slide that makes this super clear. So the thing to note about this is I'm going to keep this kind of picture as we go along. And so each of these simply represent the condition codes, each of the registers associated with the condition codes. So the carry flag, the zero flag, the sign flag, which is one if the result was negative. And the zero flag is set to one if the result was zero, and the overflow flag. So let's look at when the jump flag is taken, or jump less than or equal to. So if we do some arithmetic before, and say it's a compare where we subtract two registers, so we're comparing two registers to figure out whether or not one thing is less than or equal to the other thing, we'll see that the sign flag, the jump less than will happen if the number is negative or equal to zero. So the jump less than or equal to zero will be taken if the number is less than or equal to zero. So let's stop and kind of think about what conditions this occurs under. So this will happen if the zero flag is set. So that means it was zero. The other time it will happen is if it's negative. So then the sign flag will be set. But there is a third case where it was so negative that we got overflow. And so we also need to look at the overflow flag. So it says either the sign flag or the overflow flag must have been set, or exclusive or the overflow flag must have been set, or the zero flag was set. So any questions about this? Question? No? Okay. So jump equal to is kind of easy to see. So jump equal to happens if the zero flag is set. So look at the zero flag. If we did the subtraction, it was zero. The zero flag is set. Both numbers that we did the comparison for are equal, so we take it. And so jump greater than, assuming signed, will happen if we have the sign flag. If the sign flag wasn't set, the overflow flag wasn't set, so the resulting number wasn't negative and it didn't result in any overflow, and the zero flag wasn't set. So this means that it must have been greater than zero and not negative. So looking at these might not be super intuitive, but let's look at an example. So here's an example, like a concrete example that we can kind of step through slowly. So first, we move negative 10 into our RAX register, and then we move 20 into our RBX register, and then we do a subtraction. So we subtract RAX from RBX, right? So in this case, it's gonna be 20 minus negative 10, so that's gonna be 30. So in that case, right, or value is positive. So our carry flag isn't set, or because we didn't have any overflow, our zero flag isn't set, our sign flag isn't set, and our overflow flag isn't set. And so jump less than or equal to is gonna happen if the result was less than or equal to zero. In this case, it's 30, and it's not less than or equal to zero. So when we check our flags, is the sign flag set? Nope. Is the overflow flag set? Nope. And is the zero flag set? No, so we don't take this. Where's the, oh, so the 30 is gonna be stored in RBX. So the question is, after the subtraction, where is the 30 stored? And remember, the destination register is always last, so the 30 is stored in the register RBX. Any questions? Okay. So let's look at another example where the sign flag is actually set. So in this example, we move 10 into RAX, and then we move negative 20 into RBX, and so we do the subtraction again. So we subtract 10 from negative 20, and so in this case we're gonna get negative 30, and so the result is negative, which means the sign flag is gonna be set. And so the result is less than or equal to, the result is less than or equal to zero, so we're gonna take this jump. So let's look at how the flags being set affect whether or not we take this jump. So the sign flag is set, XOR, the overflow flag is not set, so 1 XOR 0 is 1, or the 0 flag, so 1 or 0, because the 0 flag is not set, is 1, so the jump instruction is taken.
Does the register get cleared after computation?
Yeah, so the jump instructions do not clear the registers. So that's a good question. So the condition instructions don't set the registers. So
can you use it after a few steps, after your separate instruction?
So you can't access the condition registers using assembly directly. When you look at them in a GDB, you can see them, but the arithmetic operations will set them. So you can have any arithmetic operation that happens afterwards, and it will set the condition codes for you.
I think the question is, can you like have a conditional jump after this jump?
Oh yeah, you can have. Yes, you can have multiple conditional jumps afterwards. Was that your question? Do we get it? Let me repeat it. Let me try one more time. Okay. So the question is, if you have multiple move instructions or other non-arithmetic operations between this jump and another jump, will the subsequent jump use the same condition codes that the previous jump did? And the answer is yes, because none of those instructions would have set the condition codes or cleared the registers. So that's a good question. So each of these instructions, after they execute, don't clear the condition code registers. Any other questions? Okay, so there are some operations that set these registers. So comp sets these registers. So comp does a subtraction. So if you see comp, rex, and rdi, what this is going to do is it's going to subtract from rdi the value in rdx, and then it's going to set the condition codes based on this subtraction. Similarly, there are instructions like test. And what test does, it does a bitwise AND between rex, between registers. So you'll see test rex and rex. And so in this example, I'm just kind of demonstrating bitwise ANDs. So 1 and 1 is 1, 0 and 1 is 0, 1 and 0 is 0, 0 and 0 is 0. So here, if you after you execute the test instruction, the 0 flag is set if the result is 0, and the same flag is set with the most significant bit of the result. Why is this test instruction interesting? It turns out this is the fastest way to test if something is 0. So you'll see this in the BOM lab, or you might see this in the BOM lab, where it's REX, REX, test REX, REX. Any questions? So here's an example of the compare. So can anybody think about a way of optimizing this code? Given that all of the arithmetic operations set the flags. So in this case, this is a loop where we're moving the value 99 into in R12. Then we're starting the loop. We're calling some function foo. Then we're subtracting 1 from R12. And then we're comparing R12 to 0. So if it's 0, then we would take this jump. So greater than or equal to the start of the loop. So to kind of make this clear, so we would take this jump if the zero register is not set. So here, when we're computing the value of R12, this loop is going to execute as long as the value is greater than or equal to 0. So we're just checking from 99 all the way down to and including 0. So can we see any ways of optimizing this? Yeah, so we can drop the compare. So we can just simply rely on the subtract operation. So we can drop one of these instructions. Any questions? Okay. So we looked at this example before. And here's an example of jump equal. So if we move 20 into RBX and then we add negative 20 to RBX, then we're going to get a result of 0. And so the 0 flag will be set. And so jump equal to foo will be taken in this case. So here, the result's 0. And so we take the jump. So as we think about this, it's kind of some stuff to remember. So most instructions that compute something will set these condition codes. But only some instructions set these condition codes without actually modifying any of the registers. So compare does subtraction without modifying any of the registers, and it will set the condition codes. And tests will do a bitwise and set the condition registers without modifying any of the registers. Some instructions don't change condition codes at all. So the move instructions and the load effective address instructions don't change the condition registers at all. And also, that's also true for the jump, call, and return instructions. One more time, I didn't hear you. So the question is, does the test instruction change any other condition codes besides the zero flag? And so it changes the sign flag as well with the bit of the least significant, most significant, the sign bit, yes, the most significant value. Any other questions? Question is, do all arithmetic operations update the condition codes? So say, for example, you had an add instruction and it resulted in an overflow, so it set the overflow flag. When you go ahead and have another instruction that doesn't have overflow, will the overflow flag still be set? So will it get zeroed out? So yes, so it gets zeroed out and updated with the new result. Okay, any other questions? Can you guys still hear me? Okay. So we also have this notion of computed jumps. The idea with the computed jump is that you can jump to some address that's either stored in a register, or you can compute a new address to jump to using the values that are stored in registers. So in this syntax, there's this kind of weird star syntax. And so you can say jump to the address that's stored in REX. And then this one says jump to the address that's stored in 8 times the value stored in RBX plus REX plus the offset of 1,000. So then you can still have these kind of computed jumps. Any questions? Okay, so let's look at some examples of translating from C to assembly. So we looked at this last time. So we have some for loop, and then we have if something that we want to discover at index I and j. If it's found, then we'll jump down to the section of code that that's identified by this label. Otherwise, we'd execute the whole for loop, and then we do printf not found, and then do our return. So the reason that GoTos are interesting is that they let us write these, they kind of map really neatly to these assembly instructions. So we can have this be like jump to found, and then we can have an assembly label called found. So what that means is that we can start thinking about how to translate from C code to assembly using this approach, where what we'll do is we'll have some way of rewriting this C function using GoTos. And the trick is to identify the blocks that you want to have executed. So there are kind of two blocks here. One is if then do this, and else do that. So there are these kind of two blocks. And so you can kind of set this up with go-to statements. So you could say, if it's less than 42, jump to this section. So go to this section. Otherwise, it would do this. And then afterwards, you can have another go-to that says, after you do this, go to the end. Don't execute the else. So here, you can say, if less than 42, go to after then. So that will jump down to after then, which is here, and then it will execute multiplying A by B and storing the results in A. Otherwise, it will execute the adding 10 to A, and then jump the next statement by going to the after else portion of the file. So any questions on this? So go to is, yeah, valid C code. It just refers to going to a particular line. The reason that we are doing this is not because it makes it easier for the compiler to translate, it just makes it easier for us to translate. So we know that this go to instruction, we can map it neatly to a jump instruction. So this is what we do on the next slide. And so that's the other reason for kind of flipping around the compare. So here, we can look at each of these lines and kind of figure out what the associated assembly line is. So we can say if B is less than 42, then go to after then. So we can have a compare where we compare 42 and RBX. And in this case, we're assuming that A is stored in RAX and B is stored in RBX. So we'll go ahead and we'll add, we'll compare 42 to the RBX register. And then we'll jump less than to after then. So that's this part of it. Any questions? Do we see the translation? OK. So then we can go ahead and we can do our add 10 to our REX register. And so this is going to do A plus 10 and store the result back in A, REX. And then we can do our jump after else so that we don't execute the multiplication statement. So we'll jump over that. If it was the case that B was greater than or equal to 42, then we would do the multiply. So we would use imult RBX times REX and store the result back in REX. So any questions on this? Okay, so let's try a quiz question. So you guys can get in pairs, and the idea is to take this C code and translate it to its corresponding assembly. And so we'll take 3 minutes for this because it's a little tricky. So talk to each other, and then we'll get some consensus. Maybe I can see if I could get Kahoot up and running. Okay, so since we're quiet, does that mean we need more time or we've got it? Need more time? Oh, okay. I'm going to log into Kahoot here so that we can use Kahoot to do this, because I think I want to see. Do you guys want to go ahead and join this? Room? That's like a minute, so take some time, discuss, and then vote. So there are some reds, some greens. So let's talk about it. So overwhelmingly blue. That's right. So blue is right. So let's talk about why it's not yellow. And so for yellow we do the compare. So we check to see if it's equal to RBX. But here we just jump to after else. So we never execute the and. So we never execute that add instruction. So this one's bad. So let's look at the other one. So yep, we want to jump if it's not equal to zero. That's right. And if it's not equal. And here, the subtraction instruction is broken. So for this one, the subtraction instruction is broken because the destination needs to be a register, not a constant. So come up here. So jump equal to after then. So jump equal to after then would mean that we would jump down to here. So if it was equal, then we would do the subtraction, which is not what we want. We want to do the subtraction if it's not equal. And so that's what's here in the blue one. And so blue one says we do the comparison. If it's not equal, then we skip it. If it's equal, then we would do the add instruction. So we'd add 13 to REX. Otherwise, we would do the jump to after else so that we don't do the subtraction, don't fall through. So correct answer is blue. Any questions? Any questions? OK. All right, so let's look at another example of kind of going through with this go-to approach. So here is a while loop that gets decremented. So while x is greater than or equal to 0, we're going to call this foo function. So here's our C code. Here's our translation of C code with go-tos. Notice the sign change, right? So if x is less than 0, then we're going to go to the end of the loop. Otherwise, we're going to execute foo, do the decrement, and then jump back up to the start of the loop. So this is our translation with go-tos. So in another context, any questions on this? OK. So here's another example of kind of doing a line-by-line translation of our go-tos to assembly. So we compare R12 to 0. This is assuming that the value x is in R12. So we jump less than to the end of the loop. We call foo. We decrement x by doing 1 minus the register R12. We jump to the start of the loop. And so easy line-by-line translation. So first line corresponds to our compare and our jump. This second line corresponds to our call to foo. Third line corresponds to our subtraction or decrementing of the x variable. Our fourth line corresponds to jumping to the start of the loop. And then the last line is simply end loop. OK. So which one of these is the correct translation of the assembly? And maybe I'll start this over. So you guys can use the same compute 60 seconds to come in. Well, maybe we should give you guys more time. But take some time, discuss with each other, and then and for red, green, blue. For blue, blue means that it's both B and C. Yes. So both B and C are correct. If both B and C are correct, that's blue. This is a little outdated. So a lot of people haven't put in their answers yet. So 20 seconds. Do we need more time? Ooh, so our distribution is all over the place. Do we need more time? Is that why? Okay. All right. So why don't we take some, like, take a minute, and then I'll start it. So we'll do two more minutes. I don't know if this is one of the ones I broke. Oh, question? Oh. Okay, so I'm gonna start the timer again for putting in stuff. So remember, if it's both the other ones, and I think I modified the slide, so I'm going to have to go through it.
So if I get this right again, do I get points again?
So with Kahoot, every answer is marked as right. So yeah, I just use it so I can kind of do it multiple times. So yeah.
I'm trying to be a big nerd.
All right, so only 21 answers in. So go ahead and submit your answers. 31 seconds. I guess I could put this up here. Okay, 24 answers. I think people were less sure this time. Okay, so it's all over the place. So let's, at least nobody picked A. Everybody realized that A was wrong. So that's right. So B and C are both correct. So let's just kind of go through it. So I, wait, let's, I'll go through it. So I broke this, I was supposed to break one of these, and I don't think it updated. So let me just check. So I know A is wrong, and A is wrong because we execute the call to foo without checking B. So regardless of what the value for B is, we enter the loop. The second one, we start the loop, we compare RBX and 10. So we go ahead and we subtract 10 from RBX. And if it was greater than the value, then we would jump. So this one's broken because so it should be greater than or equal to that value. So we jump to the end. So we're not going to count 10. So if this is 10, when we do our subtraction, so we do 10 from RBX, so that would give us, wait, hold on 1 second. So RBX minus 10. So if the value is greater than, we're going to jump to the end of the loop. Yeah, so if RBX is 10, we don't jump to the end of the loop. which is wrong because we need to have greater than or equal to 10. So this one's bad. Version B was bad. So I changed this so that only one of them was correct. So version C is definitely the right one. So we move 10 into REX. We do subtracting RBX from 10. And so we're assuming that 10, that B is in RBX. So we do 10 minus B. And if it's greater than or equal to, then we would jump to the end of the loop. So any values 10 or greater wouldn't execute the loop. We call the foo function. We add 1 to RBX, which is this increment. And then we jump to the start of the loop. So version C is correct.
The best one would be B with a JGE instead of JG then?
Yeah, so So when I was modifying the slides, I broke that one on purpose. I just forgot. Okay. All right, any questions? All right, so I'm going to keep going. Question? Okay. So here's another translation. We can skip this one because we're pretty comfortable. So here are some examples of arithmetic operations, like add, sub, and multiply. Remember the order that the destination is always last. And so in the book, there are a bunch more of these instructions that you can take a look at. So I want to revisit the calling convention, because we kind of mentioned it before in the previous example, but we weren't super explicit with that argument example. So here, we have some function foo. It has three arguments, x, y, and here we have some function foo. It has three arguments, x, y, and z, and it returns 42. So when we call foo, one gets stored in EDI, two gets stored in ESI, and three gets stored in EDX, and then we call the foo function. So a lot of the assembly that we're looking at before, I was always like, oh, well, the argument's stored in EDI. And this is just by convention. So if we look at the registers in for x86-64, we have the REX register. Whoops, sorry. We have each of these argument registers, so RDI, RSI, RDX, RCX, store the arguments 1 through 4, and R8 and R9 store arguments 5 and 6. So this is just a convention. REX stores the return value. So if you look here, when function foo executes, we move 42 into EAX, so returning 42. We move 42 into EAX because EAX is the return register. And R is just the whole 64-bit register as opposed to the 32-bit version. So let's look at some examples with the stack. So the call instruction pushes the next instruction on the stack. So say, for example, instruction 1 is this call instruction at address 0x5. So we push that. What it will, when call is executed, it will push the next instruction, the address of the next instruction onto the stack. So here's that instruction, and it pushes the address 0D onto the stack. And then it will set the program counter to the address for the next function. So in this case, it's 1C. So this will execute, and then when it returns, it will pop this address off the stack into the program counter. So then it will start back here at instruction 2. So there's particular calling conventions whenever a function is called. You must preserve the following registers: the stack pointer, and all of the callee registers. All of these registers in green. It's kind of hard to see on the PowerPoint, but RBX and R12 through R15 must be preserved. These are kind of conventions. So the reason for this is that when you're in another part of the program, you can't guarantee that these register values will be preserved because that program can set it to be whatever they want it to be.
Sorry, I thought that was no longer the case. I thought that only applied to 32-bit architectures. And since 64, this was actually a redundant move, this whole thing on the very bottom.
Which one? The move for R12 through R15?
Yeah, preserving the stack pointer and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, so preserving the frame pointer is no longer done. But I think that's still the case for R12 through R15.
Okay.
All right. So let's look at this question. We'll do it again. And so I'll start the Kahoot session. Maybe I'll give you guys a minute to discuss with your groups, and then we'll take a poll again. So get in pairs, chat about it, and then we'll do a minute and hit submission. Okay, and you guys can use the same Kahoot session. So 24 seconds. Okay. Do you want to start putting in your answers? Do we want to start putting in answers? Okay. I'm going to restart it because we didn't get any answers. So go ahead and I'll keep this timer up here so we can see it. Whoops. So go ahead and take, I guess, one more minute because we didn't get any answers. So I think people need more time. But yeah. Question? Oh, yeah. I can't really restart it, sorry. Because people are already putting in answers. Yeah, sorry. You could ask your neighbor. Okay, so our distribution is all over the place. So let's chat about this one. So I think the trick is like visualizing memory. So what helps me when I'm thinking about the stack pointer is that normally you'd kind of visualize this way, right? So it's Q, right? So it's push Q. So it's going to push four words, right? Which is going to be 8 bytes. And so that's going to be 64 bits. So here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Right? And we assume that it's byte addressable. So this is your stack with 0, 1, and 0, 2. So it's hard to kind of visualize this when you're kind of just looking at the stack. But if you look at it vertically, where this is your least address, so you have 2, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, you know, then 1, and so on, it makes it a lot easier. So the first one pushes 0, 1 onto the stack. I omitted some zeros up top. And then the second one pushes 0, 2 onto the stack. And so RBS is the stack pointer, so now it points towards 2, the value 2, not the value afterwards. And then it says, OK, take RBS, add 8 to it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whoops. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, right here. And then at that address, add the constant C to whatever is stored there. Or 3, sorry, to whatever is stored there. So this would be 4. And it says, take the next thing on the stack, so the stack pointer is still here, pop that into RAX. So it's going to take 2, it's going to pop that into RAX. Now the stack pointer is here, because we've executed a pop. And then it takes that value, which is now 4, and pops that into RBX. So the correct answer is A. So questions. So there should be a lot of questions about this because it's kind of tricky.
So what happens is it like, so when it
pushes the things on, like it would end up down there, and the eight RSP is the thing that makes it move up eight, and it adds it up.
Okay, yeah, so this is a good question. So the question has two parts. Question says, the first one is, does this instruction update the register RSP? Does it move the stack pointer? The second question is, do the push operations move the stack pointer? So for the second question, yes. So when you push one, the stack pointer is here, and then after you push two, the stack pointer is here. That means the value in RSP is going to be whatever this address is in that register. The second question is, when you compute this address, 8 plus RSP, is it updating the register RSP, the register value for that stack pointer? And the answer is no. It's going to this stack pointer, it's looking up the value in that register, adding 8 to it, and then using that new address. But it does not modify the RSP register. So any questions here? Yep. Oh, it's A. Okay. Any questions? I'm gonna draw. I think it'll help if I draw this. So if you look over here, right, there's a register that's holding the stack pointer, RSP. And in this register is going to be the address. So if I had it down here, and I'm just going to kind of draw this kind of crudely, but say this was 8, and this was 0. And this is location 0, 0. So before I do any pushes, say this was at 16, so x, 1, 0. Before I do any pushes, the register value would be 0, 1, 0. Then I push one more, so now it's 8. So then it gets updated. 0, 8. Then I push one more, instead of pointing here, now it points here. So now it gets updated. So now it's 0, 0. When I'm calculating the new address, I'm going to look at this register value. So this part that says 8 plus RSP doesn't change this register to X08. It doesn't do that. It computes a new address by looking at this value and adding 8 to it. So it's not updating this register. The stack pointer is still here. It calculates a new address and uses that address to do the add. Okay. Any questions on this? So for me, it helps to draw it kind of vertically. So that might help as well. Okay. All right. So a note on the stack pointer. So this will be on the tests. So the stack pointer points to the most recently pushed value, not the next unused address. So it points here, not here.
And by the on the test, we mean
those words.
On the test.
Yes.
You don't need to remember.
You don't, yes, don't need to remember this. This will be, yes, on the test. That's a lot clearer. This will be, yes, here on the test. Not you will be tested on it. Okay, so let's talk about C in the remaining 10 minutes that we have. So for the machines that you'll have in this course, the bytes, each of the types will have these particular sizes. So char will be 1 byte, shorts will be 2 bytes, ints will be 4 bytes, longs will be 8 bytes, floats will be 4 bytes, doubles will be 4 bytes, void pointers will be 8 bytes, and any type of pointer in general will be 8 bytes. So in C, there are no real Boolean values, except with one exception that we won't really talk about here. But so there are no Boolean values. So this means that any value that is not zero or a null pointer will evaluate to true in C. So that means x equals 4 here, if x is some value that's not zero or a null pointer, is true. I need to kind of fix that. And so you could kind of think about 1 or 0, 1 or any other number as being true, and 0 or any null pointer as being the only false values in C.
Technically, is there no null pointer? There isn't a null pointer in C, though. There is in C++, yes. But
I guess it's true.
It's just a defined null equals 0, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. I like these debates. This is great. Okay. So there's this notion of short circuiting, which is kind of fun. So take some time to think about this program and think about whether or not the printout here is what you expect. And if not, why? So just you guys could talk to each other and think about why this printout isn't what you expect. Okay, so let's kind of go through it. So the first function is just called 0, and all it does is prints out 0 and returns 0. And then the second function is called 1. All it does is print out 1 and then return 1. And so now we have the part that's really interesting. So this is going to print out the result of calling the function 0 and 1. So it calls the function 0, comes in here, prints out 0, and returns 0. Then so the result of this is 0. And then it goes ahead, it says, OK, I don't know the final result. So I go in and I compute 1. So it prints out 1 and it returns 1. And so 0 or 1 is going to be 1. Where it's tricky is this second case. So it goes in here and it computes 1. And it says, oh, OK, I'll go up here, print 1, and return 1. And so now it knows the result of the OR is true. So it doesn't go ahead and evaluate the next part of the OR operation. So you just get printed out 1 and the value 1. Make sense? So let's look at another example. And this is called lazy evaluation. So let's look at another example. So does anybody want to explain the behavior here? Anyone want to take a stab at it? Go for it.
So it runs 0, runs the function 0, which returns 0. And so then the and has a false in it, so there's nothing to do in the integer, so it stops that.
Exactly, so we don't need to evaluate the 1. Great. Awesome. Any questions on this? OK. So let's look at pointer arithmetic in the remaining kind of 4 minutes that we have. And so here's a layout of an array in memory. And so remember the size types that we looked at before. So here's a character array, and so each or a string, where each value here is a byte, so 1 through 12. And then here's an int, and so it's a 32. I should have updated this. This should say byte. This is a bit, sorry. So here, ints are 4 bytes, 32 bits. And so first integer plus 4 bytes, second integer, third, fourth. Doubles are going to be 64 bits. And so here it's plus 8 bytes for each beginning of each double in the array. And character or pointers in general are going to be 8 bytes. So let's look at this example of pointer arithmetic on a simple C string. So here we have some constant char pointer to a string hello world. And so this string hello world is in memory, and it is a byte array or character array. And each of these are going to be 1 byte. So hello, H-E-L-L-O, each of these is 1 byte, and even the space is a byte. And we'll have a pointer to this array stored either on the stack or in some register. And we can do math on this array. So if we wanted the sixth element in this array, we could add 5 to the pointer. So it would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and this would be the space. So if we evaluated star hello plus 0, we would get H. And if we dereferenced the address hello plus 5, we would get the space. And so this is valid C. Any questions on this? OK, so let's look at an example. So here, I don't have a drawing thing here. But so here we have some array of numbers that's size 4 of integers, so 10, 11, 12, and 13. We declare a pointer to the beginning, or we declare a pointer and int pointer. And then we have that pointer point to the numbers array. So it'll point to the beginning of the array, so 10. Then we'll dereference that pointer. We'll go to that address, and we'll update that value with 20. So that's equivalent to saying numbers at 0 equal 20. So just updating that value at 20. And then the second line says to the pointer, add 2 to that pointer. So it's not just going to add 2 to the address. It's actually going to add 8. And it knows to add 8 because it looks at the type of pointer int. And so int's going to be 4 bytes. And so it's 2 times 4, which is 8. So it'll add 8 to the address of the pointer. And then when we dereference that pointer and update the address, it would be 30. So 1, 2, 12 would turn to 30. And so the end array would be 20, 11, 30, and 13. Any questions on this? OK. So that we stay in sync with the other section, we'll stop here with 2 minutes. And then if anybody wants to come down and ask questions, I'll be here for those 2 minutes. Hey, nice to meet you.
Hey, Leslie.